But it's 5:15. You're tuned to Mass Backwards here at WBAI in New York. That means it's time for Gene Shepherd. And since we're still on the heels of St. Patrick's Day, we're going to listen to a story about Shepherd's trip to Ireland that he has just returned from on this program from September 29th of 1975. And, yes, 1975, this one has endless strings of commercials in a couple of spots. If I get tired of them, I'll skip through a few of them, only to spare you, although the nostalgic version of these commercials, the nostalgic, what's the term I'm looking for? At any rate, it'll take you back. That's what I mean to say. At any rate, Gene Shepherd in Ireland.
September 29th, 1975.
That was the voice thing. I taped all of these.
Top stories in the news. Kissinger again pledges every possible United States effort to bring about a Syrian-Israeli agreement. The state's highest court says the legislature cannot mandate the investment of public employee pension funds in Big Mac bonds. Old Casey Stengel, critically ill. This is Lester Smith reporting. Next news as it happens. Next scheduled news at 11 o'clock over WOR Radio 710, The Talk of New York.
Americans are not symbolic people. They're very, it has to be absolutely straightforward. I mean, I can just hear Archie Bunker confronted with the Iliad.
How come you didn't even just go home? How come you went on a trip?
But that's the Odyssey. So you're listening to a man home from the far-flung shores of the ancient peoples that go back so far in time that they disappear to the mists of prehistory. I mean, seriously, how would you like to live in a country where out in your backyard people have lived since probably the year 6,000, maybe 6,000 before we're here? In other words, 6,000 years ago. And you see the stones of their huts where they lived. Have you ever really thought much about how ancient peoples really did exist, how they really did live, what they thought of? And I imagine that practically every ancient people at the time it was going did not consider it ancient, of course. You know, I imagine a guy in the year 400 B.C. Living in the swamps of Connemara, the bogs, the peat bogs, turning to another of his friends, both of them, crunched down in the howling winds that come off the Irish Sea. One says to the other, you know, we're really lucky, Sean, to be alive in modern times. Do you realize what they must have gone through in the old days here? It's always that way. And I imagine 1,000 years from now, people will look back at us and say, my God, I don't know how they stood it. They actually walked around on their feet. And all of us were men in those days. But the reason I bring this up is that I just got back here a couple of days ago, in fact, 24 hours ago, actually, from Ireland. I spent 10 days in Ireland. A very special kind of trip, though. I didn't just go over there and do the Breslin bit. This was a very different kind of a trip. And I had been to Ireland, if any of you who've listened to the show any length of time recall that one of the first European countries I ever really visited years ago was Ireland. And it was fantastic to go back to Ireland today after about 10 years and see the incredible changes and yet no change. Ireland is a very strange country in one way, one important way, that it's really literally split right down the middle. On the one hand, you have the great literary world of the highly sophisticated city of Dublin, where, believe it or not, you take a bus. Let's say you were going to go on a bus tour of Dublin, for example. This is exactly what I did. And the tour, the bus driver drives you around, and he's also the tour guide. He tells you things about Ireland and about Dublin. And you know how, if you ever gone on one of those tours, any kind of a tour, okay, in America, the average bus tour consists of the guy up in the front with a PA system saying things like this, for example. Give me just a wee bit of an echo chamber, John, just a little.
Ladies and gentlemen, over on our left is the Bullard Building. There were over 2,742 million bricks used in building the Bullard Building, which is named after J.W. Buller, who invented grape jelly and made a tremendous plant just beyond over on V.C. Street. You'll see just the tip of it over the Bullard Building. This building now stands 274 feet tall. And in the wind, it bends 3 inches at the top from the base. If you look carefully at it now, you will see the Bullard Building bending in the wind. In a few moments now, we will see the Memorial Little League Stadium, which was built in 1967 as a memorial to all the men who went before in the Little League movement. This building, by the way, that you see next to the Little League building, is the American Legion Hall, which was built by collecting match covers from all the school children of Cleveland, Ohio, in the year 1947. These match covers were made into bricks, which are now part of the American Legion Hall. In a few moments now, we'll be... You've
been on that kind of tour, at least heard that kind of tour. Well, in Ireland, it's so different. I'm telling you. Can you imagine a bus driver who's riding the group around, and as he drives you around, he quotes copiously from W.B. Yeats. For example, he will drive down a street, and suddenly he will say into the PA system something like this: "Ah, so the clouds move across the ancient Irish sky, and the stars that light and illumine the battle-scarred field of those who gave their lives, always moving forward." I said, my God, he's quoting Yeats. And then he points where Yeats first saw the light of day. And you make a turn, and he points out where Oscar Wilde first saw the light. And then he quotes from the Ballad of Reading Jail. That's a little different. And then you drive past George Bernard Shaw's home, and he quotes from Man and Superman. A few snatches of Don Juan in Hell. And then and all afternoon we're riding around. We go past Trinity College, and he quotes great scholars of the ancient past who matriculated at Trinity, and what they said about the hallowed halls. And I thought, my God, if you took a tour of New York, and can you imagine what would happen if a lot of ladies with blue hair from Cleveland, we're sitting in a tour bus of New York, and the tour guide leader in pure New Yorkese began something like this.
Ladies, you'll notice that building off on the left there, that building there is where Norman Mailer first met George Plimpton. It was in 1967 that George Plimpton walked in and said, "You're Mailer, huh?" At that point, Mailer came off with one of the famous remarks that he's been quoted on many times. He said, "You must be George Plimpton. You still got that third-point Lions helmet on." And now, ladies, you'll notice that the building off to the right there, the YMHA there, that's where Philip Roth first conceived the idea for Portnoy's Complaint. It was, in fact, in the YMHA there that he wrote his first few paragraphs from Portnoy's Complaint. We are now passing the birthplace of Jacqueline Suzanne. Jacqueline Suzanne, of course, wrote The Valley of the Dolls, which starred very many Hollywood stars, none of which I can remember at this time, but you remember the movie's real great. In fact, the other day I saw it on late-late television. Right past her house, you'll see it there right next to the subway stop, and that's Jacqueline Suzanne. Right next to there is the place where Jimmy Breslin was born. Jimmy Breslin, as you know, hangs around the tavern down in the village all the time, the Lion's Head or whatever that is. He drinks a lot of beer and stuff. You'll see him on Channel 4. Now, as we move on down,
that would be kind of an exciting tour, wouldn't it? Well, I can only say to you, I don't want to get too deeply into that, but I can just tell you, tonight's show is about what the land of Ireland is like. You hear so many people, you know, talk about the IRA and the revolution. You'd think that there were nothing but people living in Ireland. But Ireland is a very fascinating, wild country, and I mean wild in the geographical sense. A very interesting place to go, just as a physical thing. First of all, it's an island. And some of the most, I'd have to say, some of the most spectacular scenery. And you never hear this about Ireland. You always think of the soft farmhouses. You see John Wayne coming up the hills, the Maureen O'Hara's coming down the other, the horses and all, you know, John Huston. But they don't tell you much about places like Connemara. You heard the name Connemara? Well, it is nothing like you think. Oh, wow. Would you please hit the money button first before we go any place, John?
Which high-potency vitamin do physicians and pharmacists recommend most? Theragran and Theragran M with minerals by Squibb. The name Squibb on the label means that you have no doubt about the honor or integrity of the maker. And right now, you can take advantage of a great special offer. Buy 100 Theragran or Theragran M tablets at the regular price and get 30 extra tablets at no extra cost. 30 extra when you buy 100. That's a month's supply for one person. But the offer's limited. Get your Theragran by Squibb now. It's the brand physicians and pharmacists recommend most for mixed vitamin deficiencies. Available at Church Chemists, 1806 Church Avenue in Brooklyn. Double discount, 45 East 8th Street, New York. J&H Rosen, 6404 18th Avenue in Brooklyn. And don't forget to tune into this weekend's Jets football game, sponsored in part by your local Squibb Theragran pharmacist.
He's a marathon man, running for the sheer joy of it, until he becomes the prey in a terrifying chase, until he stumbles into a violent world of espionage and double agents, until the boy who dreamed of winning marathon races suddenly becomes a man running for his life. Marathon Man. Critics call it breathtaking, the best American thriller this year. William Goldman's Marathon Man. Now a Dell bestseller wherever paperbacks are sold. Don't let anyone tell you how it ends.
Here's an exciting free offer that both men and women can take advantage of. Now, during their national anniversary celebration, you can join European Health Spas for 1 week absolutely free, no strings attached. If you're curving out where you want to curve in, flabbing where you want to flex, sagging where you want to be solid, you've got nothing to lose except maybe some inches or pounds or both. European Health Spas have the techniques and facilities to help make you the body you can be. Exercise equipment, indoor swimming pool, sauna, steam room, and more. Plus, good eating tips to help you stay in shape. So hurry up and get your body into the European Health Spa. The free membership offer ends September 30th. Check your white pages for the European Health Spa nearest you. Don't miss out on the 1 week free membership.
How about a little General Tire there, Al? Sing it out, gang. Let's hear it.
Yes. Someday you're alone.
Someday you're alone.
Someday
it's going to be inevitable. You're just going to do it.
Sooner or later, you'll own General
Generals. If you need a long mileage tire, get Generals 40,000 mile radial tire, the dual steel radial, built with a smooth riding radial ply body and two strong steel belts for puncture protection. That's General Dual Steel Radial, the first polyester and steel radial tire accepted by good old Detroit for original equipment use, and still popular. So see what radial tire performance can do for your old Heath. Mount your dual steel radial tires today at your local General Tire headquarters. Sooner or later, you alone, General.
You alone, Generals. Sooner or later, you alone, Generals.
Bachman's Pretzel Party is on, and you can get 50 cents back for two proof of purchase seals from specially marked 59-cent bags of Bachman Extra Thin Pretzels, Bachman Pretzel Sticks, or Bachman Pretzel Rods. Look for details on all bags with a special offer marking.
You know, I'll tell you, I went to a show there last week in the center part of Dublin, and you know, I was really pleased that somebody I ran into in Dublin remembered a line which I said, which I thought of, and which came out of a show that I did many years ago about the city of Dublin and Ireland in general. And they came up to me, and it was an Irish person, a writer, famous writer in Dublin, and he said, you know, I'll never forget that fantastic line that you came out with about Dublin. And I said, what was that? And he quoted it. Do you remember it? Well, if you don't, Dublin, and this is true, it's the kind of city that at night, 10, 11 o'clock at night, you can hear the footsteps of people walking around. You can just hear them walking down the street. You hear these footsteps for blocks. You don't hear that in New York. That's Dublin. It really is that. And the River Liffey moves roaringly right through it. And I happen to be there at the time that the mayflies are rising. And in Ireland, this is a traumatic time. Guys stop in the middle of sermons, in the middle of high mass. It has been known that a priest will stop in the middle of high mass when he's up there doing it, you know, and he hears the mayflies arising, he drops everything, the entire congregation, the priest, and the whole crowd rush out. And why? Well, because this is the time, the one fantastic time to go salmon fishing in Ireland. And then they have some unbelievable salmon. You know, you don't hear much about the food of Ireland. Let me tell you something about the food of Ireland. This is WOR in New York. First of all, one of the greatest things that you can eat in Ireland, you get all the time in Ireland, is the most spectacular smoked salmon in the world. If you think you've ever had smoked salmon, friend, you haven't had it until you've had Irish smoked salmon. They also have the most incredible bacon. It's not like our bacon. It's wide slices, thin but wide, and they're almost entirely lean. It's like a cross between our bacon and what we call Canadian bacon. But it's smoked, a very subtle smoke quality, and every morning you get this stuff there. And Irish food in general is really, if you go to the right places, it's great. For example, I was in a restaurant here just last week in it's a restaurant that's built on top of a hotel, but it's all glass all around it, and it's, maybe six, seven stories high. And it overlooks Galway Bay and the entire city of Galway. It happens to be the highest building in Galway. There's no high buildings in Ireland. And I'll give you a little insight into how much they want to keep the buildings low to preserve that curious kind of medieval, beautiful profile that Ireland gives you. That's the first thing that hits you when you're in Ireland. You don't see any tall buildings. It's just all laying there, and you can see it climbing up the hillside. There's this kind of a continuity, a feel to it. Well, in Dublin right now, there's a controversy going on. The government, a kind of a bank combination, government bank official building was being built, right? And they built it right in the heart of Dublin. And they built and built and built, and it's millions of pounds are in this thing. It's a very important building. Well, they did one incredibly dumb thing. They built it 15 feet too high. And now all of construction has stopped. The building is standing there. And they're going to have to knock 15 feet off the top of the building. And all of Ireland is in an uproar over it. See, one group says, well, what the hell? They got it built up there. Why don't you leave them? Have it up there. And there's another group says, if you leave them, do it, then the next one's... And Irishmen are the prime arguers in the world. An Irishman will argue with himself. I've seen Irishmen get so mad at themselves that, you know, they wind up in a fist fight. And it's terrible to see a guy fist fighting himself. You know, and they really do. So right now, the building is stopped. It's standing there. And that's the one of the big controversies. But traveling around Ireland, you know, there's so many things, so many memories that I'd like to talk about. One of them, since I'm not going to do the usual romantic concept of the IRA and all. Incidentally, one of the Irish officials I talked to in Ireland says the one thing we don't want, he says, why are Americans getting involved in this thing? He asked a question. He says, we don't. He says, do you realize the more money you send over here? And this is a quote from an Irish official. He's not a lackey of the British Empire or anything like that. He's just a guy. He says, if the more money you send over here, the more you're sending death to Ireland. Just quoting him. I make no more further editorial on it. But nevertheless, traveling around Ireland, got a car, and I decided to travel up into Connemara. Now, I had traveled all around Ireland. Did you ever see the movie Ryan's Daughter? Well, you know the David Lean movie? Well, there's a portion of Ireland, the Irish coast, overlooking the Atlantic, where that was shot. And that scenery there, those fantastic 700-foot-high cliffs, the incredible scenery there, has to be among the three or four most spectacular sights in the world. If you go to Ireland and you don't see that scenery, you are missing one of the great sights in the world, believe me. And I've traveled around the world. But I'm not going to tell you about that particularly because that is spectacular. But the last day, I was sitting around in an inn where I was staying, not too far from Galway. And this friend of mine, we were trying to decide what to do, and we had one more day there. And so we got this car, and we decided to drive up to Connemara. It's the only way you can get there. Now, take a look at your map if you want to see where the Connemara Peninsula is. But Connemara looks like no place I've ever seen in the world. It looks as close to the moon as you can conceive of contemporary scenery looking. First of all, no trees. This is peat. You ever seen a real peat deposit that's very dramatic and stark? And you see low-lying gorse bushes, which are bright yellow blossoms. And as you drive further out on this wild peninsula, you can see little stone huts where farmers live high up on the top of a hill. And there are these distant, totally bleak-looking blue mountains that rim the horizon. And as you drive on this narrow concrete ribbon, you can drive mile after mile and not see a single human being. Living in the Connemara Peninsula is one of the most interesting animals around. The famed Connemara ponies. Have you ever heard of them? If you know anything about horses, you've heard of them, but they're wild, you know. They're summer wild, summer ponies which are raised by the farmers in that area, and they're a special breed of pony that goes back to the very ancient of horses. And I stopped by the side of a road, and here's a Connemara pony, a dam with her foal. She's working up the side of a hillside. There's very sparse vegetation, rocks. And there was an inlet there from one of the estuary, just salt water lapping at the rocks there. And this pony is working up the side of a hill. And I stopped and watched the pony, and she was being followed by her her foal. These ponies are not small ponies. They're like small horses, but they have a curious color and an odd look about them, with long, flowing black mane and a long, flowing black tail. Totally silent. Horse is moving up the side, and she stopped at the top of the hill and looked down at us, kind of a curious, wild, truculent look, and the foal was leaping about her. And then I saw coming up up the hill a flock of sheep, which were moving towards their shelter by themselves. There was no shepherd around that I could see. They were just moving over the hill. Of course, this is spring, and there must have been 500 lambs with them. And then we drove on, and I had a wild thing happen. Jesus, I've never had anything happen like this before in any of my travels. We're driving this car along, and there's thousands of little tiny one-lane roads that crisscross this area. Not thousands, but they go off. You see something, a road goes off. Another road goes off. And we knew where we wanted to go, but there was very many places where we didn't know where the signs were. There were no signs. The signs, by the way, were in Gaelic. Try translating Gaelic sometime when you're traveling at 45, 50, 60 miles an hour. And there'd be a little white sign that has strange Gaelic figures on it. Well, and at many areas there, by the way, they only speak Gaelic. You never think of Ireland as a place where you can go into a town and have trouble finding somebody who speaks English. But we stopped by the side of this road to look at the map. And we're sitting there. It was nice and warm, and the sun was out, and there was a breeze blowing. Oh, this is what surprises you, too, about Ireland. Are you aware that Ireland, in many places, you'd just be in a place outside of, Kilkenny, maybe, or a place outside of Limerick. Just a conventional place in Ireland, not particularly exotic. And around where you are, they have tropical vegetation. Like small palm trees. And that you never thought of Ireland as having palm trees, did you? Well, they do, and they don't think anything of it. They're just palm trees. Because you see the climate there. It never gets really cold. These are plants that will grow not because it's warm, but because it doesn't get really cold. And so here you'll see palmettos outside the window. It's very strange. You get an idea that you're in Florida for a bit there. You never think of it that way. And the seafood, oh, wow. This one place we stopped at, an inn in a small town, they turned out seafood that is so fantastic. I'm talking about mussels. If you get freshwater Irish mussels, they'll have to be illegal one day. They're just incredible. I mean, but anyway, you want to hear about Connemara. So we drove out to Connemara, and you can't, if you go to Ireland, you've got to see Connemara, this peninsula. And we were driving higher and higher as we went. This is a mountainous country up there. Very little what we would call population. They think it's population. There's maybe two or three stone houses. And in this area, you're getting into the real backwaters of Ireland, and you'll find at least three out of five houses are thatched roofs and made out of stone. I mean, piled up stones. I'm not talking about stones with a plaster in between them. These are stones merely piled up, and you see ruins all around as you drive. Of houses of people who lived maybe 400 or 500 years before. And there's their little house, still piled up, made out of... After all, stones do not disintegrate like wood houses would. And there's no reason to tear it down. It's just sitting in a field there. That's kind of eerie, you know. It really is, because you get a sense then of eternal time that you can understand when you drive through the twilight in Connemara why there are such things as leprechauns. This is a wild, lonely country. Houses there have no electricity, many of them. And they light their way through life with kerosene. And those dark, curious blue hills that just are totally denuded of trees. No trees. You see this green lichen moving up halfway into nothing but granite reaching into the sky with clouds hanging over it. These are big mountains. And you'd believe in anything. In fact, there's a Connemara lady who's quoted quite widely, an old lady, and when she was asked if she believed in leprechauns and fairies, she says, of course not, but they're there nevertheless. Think about that. There's a Zen concept for you. Well, we drove along this road and stopped and it's quiet. And you hear an occasional distant bird and a gull. And by the way, as you drive along the roads in that area, grouse fly across the front of your car. And there are, you see an occasional rabbit, and they have tiny deer up there. It's wild, strange country. And, of course, rivers flowing past you, over waterfalls and through rapids, just loaded with magnificent salmon and trout. They think nothing of catching a brown trout there that goes maybe 15 pounds. Do you know what that means to a fisherman? Well, where a brown trout that goes a pound in New Jersey is the jackpot. And you see these guys wading, these ancient fishermen, these guys that have been fishing. You know, they lived through enormous ages in Ireland, particularly in Connemara. They claim that sometimes people lived to be 130, 140, and they fished every year of their lives. And nothing has changed in their lives. They're still living in the same kind of stone huts that people lived in the 17th century, in the 16th century, and often the same hut. That's the thing that scares you. So we stop by the road. It's quiet. And I'm looking at the map, when all of a sudden, through the window, right out of the bush, there was nothing but this low gorse on either side of the car. Out of the gorse, and right through the window, I'm sitting on the side opposite the driver. My friend was driving. I've got the map. This giant head comes in the window, and it's a Connemara donkey. And he comes right in the window. His whole head comes in, and he's looking at the map. And there he is. Have you ever had a donkey's head in your car? I mean, this is a really big, beautiful donkey, and they're kind of soft chocolate colored. And they have this kind of fuzzy fur and big liquid brown eyes, huge ears. You've seen donkeys. So the first instinct, you have two instincts. One, to dive for the floor of the car, or the other instinct is to do what I did. I petted him. And he loved it. You know, you're petting his head, and he just looked at you. It's absolutely, totally gentle, but a tremendous animal. At that point, apparently, the word was out that we're okay. About 25 donkeys came out of the undergrowth and surrounded the car. We're surrounded with donkeys. And I said to my buddy, I said, George, what are we going to do with the donkeys here? He says, well, why don't you get out and scare them away or something? He says, because if I drive the car now, I'm going to kill about seven donkeys. So I struggled out of the car. And if you can imagine yourself being surrounded by 45 totally affectionate collie puppies, this is what the scene was. Only these were, each one weighed about 500 pounds apiece, you know? And so all these donkeys are nuzzling me, and they're coming around cheering and yelling, whatever the donkeys do. And, I mean, to denote affection, the donkeys fell completely in love with Shepherd over there. You know, I'm big among the donkeys, so I'm petting the donkeys while my buddy is driving the car slowly through the crowd. We finally clear the crowd, and I run like crazy, jump into the car, and the donkeys are coming after me. You know, the party's just getting started. You know, what the hell's that? See? And they had started whinnying frantically when we were leaving. They wanted us to stay, apparently. So we drove on down the road, and I thought to myself, my God, only in Ireland can you be surrounded by totally friendly donkeys. Well, that happened not once, but three times along the road. So as we drove further on up, we came across this really spectacular sight. And if you're at all interested in the history of the 20th century, it is a truly historical spot. Do you have, speaking of spots, John, would you please?
It's an exciting time in Belrose, Queens, and the surrounding areas because Roosevelt Savings Bank is running a free gift celebration in honor of their newest office. Scores of brand name gifts for new depositors and scores of door prizes, too. No deposit necessary. And that's only part of the exciting story at Roosevelt's Belrose, Queens office. The other important thing has to do with your family's financial future. Listen, at Roosevelt Savings Bank, interest rates on all types of savings plans are the highest permitted in the state. And you can't beat them at any other thrift institution. Roosevelt's top rates apply on regular and day of deposit accounts and on savings certificates with
Here's the savings one way to get through the commercial scenario.
If principal and interest remain undisturbed for a full year, your effective annual yield is really higher than you'd expect. Put that together with a free gift bonanza, and you've got unbeatable reasons to head for the new Belrose office, 24753 Jamaica Avenue near Commonwealth Boulevard in Belrose, Queens. Member FDIC.
Why did I switch to Digel? Look,
Sometimes I can get heartburn, but not heartburn alone. Heartburn with gas. But Digel is antacid and anti-gas. Digel relieves my heartburn and my gas.
Why did I switch to Digel? Acid indigestion and gas, that's why. But Digel is antacid and anti-gas. Digel relieves my acid indigestion and my gas, too.
Switch to Digel, the anti-gas antacid. Use only as directed. Digel.
A woman's laxative should be as gentle as she is. That's why so many women use Correctol, the woman's gentle laxative. Correctol's special formula combines a mild laxative with a softening agent. Its gentle overnight action helps you feel like yourself again. And Correctol is gentle enough to use after childbirth and at those times of the month when gentleness is especially important. Read, follow label directions. Correctol, the woman's gentle laxative.
Oh, boy, that was exciting. Keep them rolling with the Long Island Press. Every Thursday, the Long Island Press publishes a special do-it-yourself column on auto repairs that can save you many dollars in expensive repair bills.
Learn the exciting, thrilling new hobby of valve grinding. It's really exciting. Learn how to replace new gaskets and mufflers and, you know, just get out of there and get that old grease going. It's really exciting. Join the prestige group, the more than million Long Island Press readers, and keep your car rolling. Every dollar counts nowadays. Have fun while you're doing it. Look out for the fingernails, though.
It's the heavyweight title fight you want to see, Ali versus Frazier, and the place where you want to see it, Madison Square Garden. It's Muhammad Ali defending his crown against former champ Joe Frazier. Only the Garden will have it in closed-circuit color on four giant screens, plus a full card of six live bouts featuring a light heavyweight fight pitting top contenders Mike Rossman against Mike Quarry. It happens Tuesday, September 30th at 8 p.m. Tickets for the Ali Frazier title fight are on sale for $30, $25, and $20 at the Garden Box Office and Ticketron outlets.
Fly Aeromexico, the airline of Mexico to Mexico soon. Better. Aeromexico has over 1,000 Aeromexico quality approved tours to Mexico. There's bound to be one just for you. See your travel agent or call Aeromexico, the airline of Mexico, and fly with us soon.
Decaying a child's baby teeth should not be neglected. Besides the possibility of pain and infection, with possible involvement of the developing permanent tooth bud, decay can also lead to the loss of space for the permanent teeth, requiring orthodontic therapy. Prompt treatment of decay in children's teeth can easily and painlessly be accomplished by modern dentistry to prevent such future problems. I'm Alan King, speaking for North Shore University Hospital and WOR.
Let's see. Well, all right. Now, question now. Most people in America, of course, and in the world, really, like to think that the first transatlantic flight was Charles Lindbergh. You probably believe this too, don't you, John? Not so. Did you know that the first transatlantic flight was made by two men in an airplane? It was I'm not sure what the aircraft was. It was a twin-engine airplane using Rolls-Royce engines. Great big biplane, an open biplane, where the pilots sat side by side in the airplane. And a tremendous big airplane with bicycle landing gear underneath it. And they took off from Newfoundland. And they landed in Ireland on one day in 1919. And that was a good, long time before Lindbergh. Lindbergh went 1927. Now, the reason I'm bringing this up is as we drove up this wild Connemara Peninsula, actually nothing there, just a few little towns, there was a sign suddenly said, a little pointing arrow, said, site of Alcock and Brown's historic landing, the first transatlantic flight in history. That way. Fantastic. I'll tell you, it's such a wild place. You can't imagine anybody. Well, today, there's just absolutely nothing there. And you can't even get into it. It's giant boulders and gorse and peat bogs. And we drove on a small road that was nothing but rocks. In fact, the sign said, this road is totally unsafe for automobiles. And it was. We found it out. We drove about 400 feet on it, and forget it. Any minute now, we were going to lose that human of ours into an endless peat bog, and it's all over, including us. They'd find us nicely preserved in the year 7000, sitting there bolt upright in our human Avenger. But it was fantastic. So we turned around. You can only view it from a distance now, there where they landed. And we turned around and went back up to the top of a huge hill where it said you could view the site from this hill. And up on the top, they have an airfoil made out of Connemara marble. Looks like a big 707 jet tail standing up there. It's a monument. And the thing says, directly ahead of you, in line with this monument, you'll see a white marker. And 500 yards from that marker, further on, they couldn't even get in there to put up a marker, is the place where Lieutenants Alcock and Brown landed on that historic day in 1919, the first transatlantic flight in history. And you see this little tiny white marker in the middle of those wild landscapes. Well, we drove, after looking at this, just wild, the wind blowing, and we drove down and up into the town of Clifton, C-L-I-F-D-E-N, which is a small town, but for that area, it's a big city. Has probably 1,500 people in it, you know. Little stone houses lining the streets and little tiny shops. And we went into a men's clothing shop. And we just walked in there because they had these sweaters in the window, these Irish sweaters and things. And no tourists, no tourists come there. No way. We went into this little shop where they were selling Irish shoes, giant brogans for walking in peat bogs. And this elderly gentleman is standing behind the counter, and we ask him about Alcock and Brown, and he lit up like a Christmas tree. Guy must have been 80 years old. And he says, sure, I saw them, yes. He says, I saw the plane go over at 9 a.m. He says, I was to have gone to Mass. My mother was at the church, but I did not go that morning since I had a sore throat. And I looked out, and I see the airplane. He flew right over. And he had seen the airplane of Alcock and Brown fly over, and it landed. It crash-landed, you see. They landed. Of course, they could not get the airplane out. It was way in the bog. A peat bog is not wet, you know. It's just very wild and spongy. And the plane had gone in, nosed over, and the two men were safe. And he went into the back of the store and brought us out his most prized possession. And it was just, you could just see he was so proud of it. He had a piece of the wing of the first aircraft that ever flew the Atlantic. And it was a piece of in those days they had wooden spars in their wings, of course, that were held together by tiny tacks, and it was a cloth-covered airplane. And he had a piece of the varnished spar that was signed by Lieutenant Alcock and Lieutenant Brown, as well as contemporary accounts of it. He kept a notebook on the whole thing, and he had pictures and scrapbooks and so on. It was the biggest thing that ever happened in his life, obviously. And nobody ever talked to him about it, apparently. He was so pleased. He had a model of the airplane, which they, when the celebration in 1969, which was the 50th anniversary of that flight, apparently some of the Air Force flew over and parachuted down to this town tiny models of the original aircraft. And he had this model, and he talked to us about it, and tears in his eyes, the whole business. And so we went back out into the wind, which blows always over the town of Clifton, which is a medieval town, go well beyond medieval days. The city of Clifton, they say, is one of the oldest inhabited spots in all of Ireland, and they have found ruins in the area there that go back as far as 5,000 and 6,000 years, where people actually lived in that wild moon landscape. It's an Ireland you don't hear about. And I'd like to talk more about it. In fact, I'm going to do several shows on Ireland, so be prepared for that. And I one of the scariest things that's happened to me in a long time happened when we were in Connemara that afternoon, driving back. We turned around. We were going to drive to Galway, which is, maybe 75 miles away from that totally curious ancient civilization. You have the feeling that the ancient Celts are still there. They don't play basketball. I tell you. And you see a guy off in the distance working in the peat bog, cutting peat all by himself. What's the name of the instrument they use to cut peat? You've come to the right place. It's an ancient, ancient instrument and plays a role in one of the famous plays of all time of Irish playwrights. That instrument, a murder was committed symbolically with a hoe or an instrument for peat cutting. But as we travel back towards Galway with the night coming on and that wild landscape around us, we had a thing happen. Wow. Ireland, and if you don't know much about Ireland, the geographical Ireland, most people know about the political Ireland and the poetic and the literary Ireland, but very few people talk much about the geographical Ireland and the Ireland that is part of the ancient world. Do you know from the very beginning, Irishmen were involved with myths and counter-myths, and even to this day, the Irish people are laced through with druidic faint echoes of ancient sacrifices on ancient moors and ancient gods. Do you know what the word Ireland means? Speaking of druids. This is WOR New York.
WBAI New York. And there we have Gene Shepherd. All the way from September 29th, 1975, to round out this edition of Mass Backwards. I'm Max Schmid, half awake, and ready to face another day. You're in the salt mines of WBAI in New York.